Hello and welcome to this edition of the Demand Gen Report audio podcast. I'm Amanda Ferranti-Batista, associate editor here at Demand Gen Report, and I'm here with Eloqua CEO Joe Payne. Joe, thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks for having me, Amanda.
So we are here fresh off the Eloqua Experience event. So, Joe, I have some questions for you with regard to market automation in general and some of the recent announcements that came out of the Eloqua Experience. So I guess I'll just start by asking you, there's been a lot of buzz about the release of Eloqua 10, which was just released this morning. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So can you share with our readers some of the highlights of the new version and your strategy for how this will be rolled out for both new and existing customers?
Sure. You know, Eloqua 10 is a whole new way of looking at marketing automation. When we started the project 2 years ago, we said we don't want to make an application that is just easy to use. We want to make a very powerful application that is a joy to use. And that was a real challenge. We spent the first 4 months not writing a single line of code. All we did was talk to customers, go into the boardroom with smelling markers and draw up diagrams, fight, argue. I brought our customer support team, our best practices team, our product management team, and our product development team all together for that exercise. So lots of voices of the customer involved. After 4 months of fighting it out, we figured out on how we wanted to build this application, and we've been working on it for over a year now. So this is the culmination of a tremendous amount of effort. Interestingly, over the last 2 or 3 months, we've actually had customers live running their email systems and their Eloqua systems on this. So technically it's in beta, but it's their production system. And through that process, we've been getting lots of feedback from customers on how they want to see things and how they want things to work. And so this is probably the most one of the most thought-out B2B applications built in the last couple of years. A couple of areas we're really excited about. We have built an application that feels like a desktop application, but it's on the internet and in a browser. And so simple things like type-ahead search that happen very, very quickly. In terms of pulling assets, you can drag assets onto the campaign canvas. Rendering and editing tools that are beautiful and easy to use. In fact, we've used such cutting-edge Java technology in this particular application that Internet Explorer actually has trouble rendering some of the Java that we do. So we are out there on the cutting edge, and we're excited to be there because what results in being on the cutting edge is our users are going to really, really like using the product. We've had some of my favorite comments have been, this is like using, you know, a Mac application. Or it feels like we're on the desktop using an Adobe application. So we've had great feedback. So we're pretty excited about it. We have two products now. It's pretty exciting for us. We have Eloqua 10 and we have Eloqua 9. And the biggest concern my customers have had is that they're very happy, that they have users trained all over the world, and they're using Eloqua as their system of record for marketing all around the world. And many of them have literally, passionately come and said, we don't want to change that. And so we made a decision. I actually talked to Josh James, who's on our advisory board and was the CEO of Omniture, and he's done lots of acquisitions and had lots of new products, and he gave me some great advice. He said, look, you have two great products. Just keep them both. And so we announced to our customers today that if you're on Eloqua 9, you can use it for as long as you want. You can stay on it forever. We are never going to discontinue Eloqua 9. Makes it easy for our customers. We're already managing the same back end because Eloqua 9 and Eloqua 10 are on the same back end. It's not a big deal for us to have both versions out there. You know, most SaaS companies have multiple versions of their product out there. So really it's up to the customers when they want to move to Eloqua 10. The other announcement we made was that we would charge no more money when and if they decide they want to move to Eloqua 10. So there's no upsell. They don't have to think about, you know, doing it at a budget time or anything like that. It's the exact same price they're paying today. And that really should grease the skids a little bit in terms of taking the friction out of the decision for the client. And so really it becomes a very personal decision for every organization. Our customer success managers are essentially reaching out now that we've launched the product to all their customers and saying, what are you thinking? We can plan this out. We can do it, you know, we can do it with training, corresponding. We can do it, you know, any number of ways. And they're looking at how each customer, how many assets they have, you know, what they want to do, et cetera, to make that decision. Now, one of the things that's out in the industry is, oh, but if we move to Eloqua from Eloqua 9 to Eloqua 10, it's going to be this giant forklift. It's like moving from a PC to a Mac. Nothing could be further from the truth. We've converted, I think, about 14, 13 customers to date, and the average conversion time is 4 minutes. So, you know, we anticipated this was going to happen. We've built all tools to migrate assets and to migrate programs, and we have systems in place to do that. It's been very, very painless for our users. The hardest part, as with any new application, is they're learning a new application. And it's so much easier, it's so much more intuitive, it's so much more exciting, and yet it is still a little bit new.
Right.
And so most of our customers have said, well, let's just be, you know, we don't want to do it in Q4 because we're driving our business, and then we're going to run all our beginning of the year campaigns, then maybe we should wait until this, or there's a use case that we want to wait for till it comes out. And so there's a lot of discussion, but we're really, we have no forced strategy for our customers. There's no economies of scale for us on moving. We don't care if we move 500 today or 300 or 100 or 20. It doesn't really matter to our business. What you will see, though, is all of our new customers will be moved on to Eloqua 10 right away.
Okay.
And so there might be an occasional new customer because maybe they worked at someplace else and they've used Eloqua in the past. They want to use Eloqua 9. Sure, we'll sell them that. There's no reason not to. But I would say the large preponderance of new clients will go immediately to Eloqua 10.
Okay, great. So recently we ran a story on the state of marketing automation and adoption rates throughout the first three quarters of 2010, which some say fell below industry expectations. So how is the adoption curve unfolding in your opinion, and what kind of growth do you anticipate for 2011?
It's a good question. I think, you know, this space is growing probably about 50 to 60% a year, which is tremendous growth, all things considered. I think what we'll see is that growth accelerate over the next couple of years, because 2009 was really a big hiccup for marketers. You know, Forrester says that 15% of all marketers lost their job. 15% lost their job. And the average cut of the marketing budget across all B2B businesses was 25%. So you can imagine a situation where, you know, 15% of the workforce has been laid off and a quarter of your budget has been cut. And trying to do anything new in that environment was very difficult. So we saw very little growth in 2009. In 2010, we've seen the growth come back strong, and we're expecting to grow. In Eloqua's case, we'll grow from $50 million in revenue or $51 million in revenue to $65 to $68 million in revenue next year. And so we're seeing the growth really pick up. We're very excited about that. Probably more importantly, what we see is large companies that typically are slow adopters of new technology and technique. We see them coming to the table. We're working now with a Fortune 5 organization that is really taking a broad look at how they do marketing and saying, we've got to change the way we do it. So that is extremely encouraging for us in terms of market growth. Now, I think the vendors in the space all have to work hard to help educate. I mean, anytime you're in a new market, we're not a replacement market, we're in a new market, and we have new concepts and new ideas. The vendors have to really help spur that growth. And Eloqua's had a couple of announcements this week around that. So we'd be glad to talk about those if you'd like to.
Yeah, that would be great. So why don't we do that? I guess we'll build on that. So recently there was a benchmark report released. So do you want to share some of those findings that you found particularly interesting from that?
Yeah, and I think let me pull up and share a couple of areas where I think you're seeing us try to help the market grow quickly. I mean, one of the real issues in the market is there are not that many people that know how to do demand generation and marketing automation. And so if you go onto monster.com and search Eloqua help, you can find literally hundreds of people looking for skill sets. So we recognize that need. We opened up and relaunched Eloqua University this week. And we have currently 8 full-time professors. That's all they do is teach people in Eloqua University. And we've organized the certifications in such a way that our customers and even non-customers can educate themselves on the various disciplines in this market, because it really is a discipline. So that's a way we help to grow the market, because if there's good people out there, we know they'll begin to adopt some of these techniques and processes. We also, as you mentioned, we launched the benchmark report. And before I talk about the benchmark report, let's talk about another thing we announced today, which is what we're calling GAP for sales and marketing. And GAP for sales and marketing means applying the concepts of generally accepted accounting principles, which is standards, essentially, across sales and marketing. And if you apply standards and say, look, the way marketing campaigns in a B2B world should be measured is like this, and everyone starts to measure their campaigns the same way, then you can start to see trends across companies, trends across industries, and you can begin to benchmark whether your marketing department is best in class, in the middle of the class, or worst in class.
Right.
And benchmarks really help organizations figure out what they can do and what they can do better and where they're best in class. And so as part of that, we've taken an exhaustive approach to data. And we hired a full-time person at Eloqua whose only job is to analyze all the data that we have in our SaaS system. And the first result of that, just the very first, is this benchmark report we put out. When we pulled all the data together, we realized we had 10,000 months of data. That's a lot of data. You know,
yeah.
It's a lot of data to manage and massage. And so our first step was to say, let's pull some basic information out of that data, and let's make some conclusions and begin to get that data out. But what we're really doing with the benchmark data is we're going to cut it a number of different ways so that our customers can then benchmark themselves against the industry and what's happening in the industry. Now, specifically, the benchmark data report itself showed a couple of interesting things. First, it shows that campaign sizes are getting smaller, and we think this is really good. Because what it means is that marketers are marketing to people that they know have an interest, and they're targeting more selectively their products and services. So instead of just spamming, let's send to 50,000 users in my database, we are seeing marketing campaign sizes come down dramatically, and we think this is great for customers. It's great for people that consume emails. So when I get an email, I want it to be about something that I care about. So that's a big trend we're seeing, and we view that very positively. The other thing related to email, you know, there's been a lot of pundits that have declared email is dead. Email is far from dead. We're seeing, in fact, a greater use of email over our customer base. What we're seeing, though, is a targeted use of email. And so people are running more campaigns but fewer sends because they're doing selective sends. And we think that's great. We think, you know, to look at what product pages people are looking at, what activity they're undergoing, how frequently they're on our website, they're cutting their email list that way, which is a much better way to cut your email list than, let's pick the 3,000 companies that are this size
right.
in this geography. So email isn't dead. Selective email is really getting more and more popular. And then I guess the last thing that I will share with you on one of the findings that I thought that was interesting was about lead score. Most marketers think of lead score as a way to decide whether a lead is ready to give to sales. What we're finding is that marketers are also using lead score, and what the benchmark data shows is that marketers are using lead score to determine whether their campaigns worked or not. So as a measure of campaign success or failure. So if I run a particular campaign, you know, a certain, webinar, I can now measure not just how many marketing qualified leads or how many opportunities I got out of that, but what were the lead scores of the people after they saw that campaign, and then measuring that same campaign a month later and saying what were the lead scores of those people who we touched in that campaign a month later. And by doing that, marketers are using lead scoring as a way to evaluate their own marketing and tweak their marketing so that they can get higher and better lead scores. We think this is it was a surprise to us because it's a more sophisticated use of lead score than we expected. And until we ran the benchmarking report, we weren't aware of that in a systematic fashion.
Okay, great. I appreciate you sharing your perspective on those findings.
Sure.
So going back to marketing automation, the landscape, so looking at the competitive landscape, while you guys have enjoyed a leadership position for quite some time, are you at all concerned about the growth of competitors like Marketo or Pardot?
Well, if you don't have competitors, you don't have a marketplace. You know, if we were the only player in the space, I'd be really worried. And if we were the only healthy player in the space, I'd be really worried. So I'm excited that that Pardot and HubSpot and Marketo are all growing. Right? They're all growing rapidly, and that's great because what that suggests is there's a healthy market. Each of us has our own niche where we think we serve customers better, and but I think the market is huge. And so, you know, if we look out 5 years, there's probably going to be 10 strong competitors. You know, maybe 8. But so we expect there to be a lot of competition in the space. I think that the interesting players going in the future are IBM. You know, IBM bought Unica, and they've expressed a desire to be an aggressive player in the space. Oracle bought Market to Lead, and they're including some of the Market to Lead functionality in their products. I expect a number of other large companies like that to enter the space.
Okay, great. To build on that, it's one of the common themes here was, or one of the topics discussed was Oracle's acquisition of Market to Lead. So that application is reportedly now being rolled out into Oracle's CRM suite. What impact do you think that could have on the space in general, long term, and do you foresee more of a marriage between marketing tools and CRM that could lead to more acquisition activity?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think what the Oracle acquisition does is it gets the conversation about marketing automation or revenue performance management occurring in lots more sales cycles. You know, Eloqua's got a small sales staff compared to Oracle. Oracle's in thousands of accounts. So Oracle going in and talking to people about demand generation, marketing automation, or revenue performance management is great. And you know why? Because we actually believe in this big sea change. Those people that Oracle talks to will go back to their desk and they will Google marketing automation, demand generation,
right,
or revenue performance management. And you know who's going to come up? We are. And so nobody listens to a vendor and says, you know what, we're an Oracle shop, we're going to buy everything Oracle sells. That doesn't happen anymore. That's not the world we live in. And so that means we're going to get brought into literally hundreds, maybe thousands of sales cycles we otherwise would not have had access to. Now, we'll win some of those and we'll lose some of those to Oracle. You know, we'll compete fairly. We really like our chances against them right now. We're purpose-built to solve this problem. All we're focused on is solving this problem. We have lots of thought leadership in this area, and we have lots of large organizations who are using our systems. And so I like our chances against Oracle in that environment because Oracle is doing 1,000 things, and their salesperson to learn all this stuff is really hard, and they don't have the best practices and the expertise. And remember, while Oracle has the Market to Lead product, we were beating the Market to Lead product pretty handily before they got bought by Oracle. So if anything, I like our chances a lot in those sales cycles. Now, we love Oracle. They're a partner of ours. We go into sales cycles with them all the time, and we'll continue to do that. But that's the market's big enough for all of us to exist, and we think them talking about what we do really expands the market for us.
Okay, great. Well, speaking of partners, there have been some interesting headlines and blog debates recently regarding partnership landscape. So how do you see the role and structure of partners changing as the category begins to mature?
Yeah. Well, there's different kinds of partners. And I think that where we get in trouble is when we use the word partner, you know, broadly, and that everybody's a partner. I think, implementation partners are really an important part of this ecosystem and always have been, because marketers have their vendors that they like to use, and they have people that they like to call at the last minute and say, I need 400 T-shirts made. Can you make them for me tomorrow? And every marketer's got that go-to person. So on the technology side, they're going to have some of those type of partners too. And we have a very healthy relationship with a bunch of service providers that do that. And we'll continue to do that. And I think those service providers will provide lots of service around the entire industry. And some will work with multiple vendors to do that. I think resellers are different. And, resellers, people that represent the company, that take part of the sale, a percentage of the sale for the company, are, I think the industry is trying to figure out how we want to treat those partners. There are not many SaaS companies that even have resellers. I mean, Eloqua is very unique in that we have resellers. Most, Salesforce.com, for example, has no resellers. They sell their product, and you only buy it from Salesforce.com. So we've been experimenting with the reseller model, and what we found recently is that if someone is an Eloqua reseller, they can't be one of our competitors' resellers at the same time. It just doesn't work, because what happens is they decide on who to represent in a sales cycle based on which vendor brought them in.
Right.
And so in some ways, that in no way is that a vendor-neutral approach. You know, when if they talk to the customer and say, okay, GE, you know, we can sell you whatever these things, so we're neutral. In fact, what was happening in the marketplace is whoever had brought, whichever vendor had brought that partner into GE, they were loyal to. It didn't matter what GE's requirements were. They were sworn loyal to that vendor. And so we found ourselves one day partnering with somebody with our most intimate secrets and going to war with them, and then literally the very next day across the street going head-to-head against that partner in an environment which where the partner was taking a role that said, hey, we're agnostic, when in fact they weren't. So in some ways, that benefited us, and we just decided we didn't want to be part of that, you know, with the customer. We want everything to be transparent. It's a transparent world. You know, we want everything above board. We want to make sure that the customer knows if I'm buying from that partner and that vendor, that I'm buying from them, and there's no you know, alternative arrangements in the background. And so that was something that we wanted to make sure that we enforced. So we basically said to our resellers, if you resell our product, you can only resell our product. You don't have to resell our product. You could be an implementation partner. You can be a referral partner. There's other ways that you can engage with us. And I think that makes a lot more sense. And it also separates the guys that are truly agnostic. So Serious Decisions, Forrester, you know, Gartner, they're agnostic. They don't you know, take money from a vendor in any way, shape, or form to make recommendations. And so it helps clients, I think, because clients now can know, if I have an agnostic partner, they don't have a backroom deal with the vendor. So we think it's good for the business. You know, it's and there's plenty of growth for everybody. And so there's a lot of vendors out there and a lot of partners out there. And I think it's going to be a very, very healthy ecosystem. I think one last thing I want to say about partners is we started the first SaaS partner program in 2007. And from the first day that I started that program, I sat with the partners and said, I want to share with you my very best stuff. I want to share with you my most intimate information, and in exchange for that, we're gonna be like this. We're gonna be hand in glove. We're gonna be very close with you. And as we develop intellectual property, like the C-Suite 16, and we share that with our partners, what we were struggling with is we can't have our closest competitors take those same ideas and sell against us with our own ideas and other accounts. And so, making sure that if I could still have the relationship with my partners. I sat with my partners and said, I'd like to have the relationship where I tell you all my darkest secrets, which is all my product plans, all our best ideas, etc. But in order to do that, I need to know that they're not going to go out the door and get taken by my competitors. And my partners all said, absolutely. We want to have that. We want to be part of that. And so those are the partners that stayed with us. Now, if a partner said, no, I don't want to live in that world, and we want to take a different approach, we said, absolutely, no problem, fine. And so I think it's a pretty healthy, it's a healthy growth and a maturation for our space that's happening right now.
Excellent. Thanks, Joe, for sharing that great content. And thanks to our listeners for taking the time to check out our podcast. Stay tuned for upcoming content in our Demand Gen podcast series.